the Yitzhi Squared wrote me into this. The question, the topic, I guess, of the thought process was to try and give over a little bit of flavor of what it was to be in yeshiva and how that developed and how that impacted the Talmidim, which were in yeshiva, I guess, from, and I'll talk about myself, I can't talk about everybody else, but the general feel of what happened, I think it was, a lot of us were had similar experiences. My personal exit, my personal saga, some of you guys know, some of you guys don't know, the guys are the older Hever for sure, and I was sitting shiva for my mother, Allah Shalom, so I got some of the more of the, I'm kind of Menachem Avil, some more of the stories came out, some of the more wild stories about my, you know, different parts of my, but the fact that I was able to go, and looking back, it was a tremendous boost to be able to go from where I was to where I ended up and where I am now. It's a nace nigla. Shira Chaim actually told me that one time. He says that we were talking about one of the issues, dealing with some family issue. And he said to me that he feels that the same nace that he experienced to survive from the war, to be able to get out through Siberia and come to America and survive where most of his family was killed, he says it's the exact same nace he feels that I was able to come where I came from to where I ended up, you know, in yeshiva. It was the exact same nace as far as he was concerned.
Done.
So you got a picture of how extraordinary the background was. So for me, it's a little bit different than maybe some other time meeting, because for me, yeshiva was Abba and Ima, and it was home. So, which allowed me in many ways to take advantage of opportunities in yeshiva, which other bochum didn't necessarily get. I just think one marshal. I was in public school, and I went straight from public school into Tel Yeshiva. There was no Kiryas Yeshivas in 1974. So I went straight from public school into yeshiva, and there was a great hesitation amongst some of the members of the whole of the yeshiva to take a boy who had been frum for 4 weeks. Finished Shomer Shabbos for 4 weeks and had finished learning Aleph Beis about 6 months before that and straight into yeshiva. It was a little bit of a wild thought process. I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to do it either. So, Bashira Gifter was behind it. So I dealt with Shaychas Rashiva, like from day one, you know, he took a special interest in me. So I remember when, you know, when I had issues, I would go to Shaychas Gifter and the Bacham would take them, like, are you crazy? You know, the picture of her gifter was Sheba was a very demanding, exacting persona mitzvah bacher in regards to learning expectations, etc. And here I was going discussing issues with her gifter, and the people thought I was absolutely, you know, they thought I was absolutely off of my rocker. I mean, like, you know, like that you should consider that, but like it was like what the problem is. My experience with Shira Gifter was that in Beis Medrash he when it came to learning, there was no quarter. When it came to learning, if you're wrong, you were wrong, and if you were thinking something stupid, you were told you think something stupid, right? And you know, and he said it in no uncertain terms, and he would very very explicitly tell you that's ridiculous. And he would say it, that Shira had an extremely powerful voice, so he would if you walk over to them during Seder to speak to them on learning, the Yeshivas learned both Storm and Yeshiva. He learned full first Seder and full second Seder and sitting in Yeshiva. He had an office in the Yeshiva in the building, and he never used it. His son-in-law used to use it all the time. Rabbi Foyer, Shlita, used to use the office to learn in there and write his Swarm. He wrote Swarm, and he wrote for Art Scroll, different things, etc. So this is way back when Art Scroll was like nations. It's totally as an aside, you know, we look at the world of Art Scroll. Art Scroll was a Bencher, Zemiris booklet, invitation company on the Lower East Side, which was failing. It was almost bankrupt. And one of the friends of the owner was a person named Ramirez Lotowitz, and one of his close Chavarim's wives passed away, so he thought he would do something special for the Shloshim They're going to put out a sefer, an English Megillas Esther, the Ili Nishmasa, in 30 days. Okay? So he commissioned Rav Nosson Sherman, they were there, Chaver from Yeshiva Tarvadas, to write like introduction, hence the article overview. And they put out the Megillus, the article Esther in 30 days. And that changed, you know, that it saved the company, let's put it like that. You know, if you look back, you know, I think it was, I would say it was 1977, 1978, something like that. So it's Imamish, like, but this is, you know, the so again, back to Gifter. So Gifter was there was no quarter missing. But in the house, he was a different person. Totally different person. He'd walk into the house, and his first line was, "Eli, my tire bus can't turn for it. You know, what can I do for you, my dear? You know, that was it was a total." But it makes matters. I mean, he had this extremely powerful voice, and you woke up on the Seder. And he would tell you loud enough that the whole base management would hear how stupid your answer, your question was, or how stupid your answer was. He wanted you to think. He expected you. It was a very European yeshiva, and the yeshivas, you know, even Gifter was American born, but he was, you know, his chinuch was European parents, and he learned in Europe. They weren't into giving compliments. I told people I can count on my two fingers the compliments I got from a Gifter. And one was by Sheva Brochus, so that doesn't count. You know, like,
was the other the Vart?
What?
Was the other one the Vart?
No. No, if you said something good on learning, you got a compliment. You know, he liked the Vart, but else personally, you know, behind our backs, he would say nice things about us. You know, he talked to somebody else, says, you know, so-and-so was doing well, etc. But he wouldn't tell us directly. That wasn't the Mahalos. But what's fascinating is all the Shivas were like that, but you knew they held up to you. They had a way of communicating very personally with us, and that we knew very much that they held of us. We knew very much that they had a confidence in us. They conveyed it without giving compliments. Most fascinating thing. I mentioned once that we had something called the Vibe. The Mahalik tells, I don't know, it was all the yeshivas, I don't know, but it tells very much it was the older Bachar ran the yeshiva. Like the yeshivas hadn't learned. I mean, except for they had to, you know, take care of the momentous. But they didn't run. Most of the yeshiva was not run by the Rosh Yeshivas. They sat and learned. Rosh Yeshiva Chaim, Rosh Gifter, you know, sat the full two star in base matters. You saw them learning, and you know, full star in Gifter means they didn't say Shir. So Seder was over 130. Seder was over 130. He didn't leave 130. Like, what was the rush? You know, Erev Shabbos Seder was over 12:30 in the winter. So it was, because Shabbos was pretty early over there. So, at one time, as he was living with the Sarusa, we gifted him with the Sarusa. So, 12:30 came, 12:30 went, 1 o'clock came, 1:30, 2 o'clock, 2:15. He raises his hand, "Why is it so quiet in base matters?" Like, you know, like, for an hour and 45 minutes, he didn't notice that it was quiet in base matters. I didn't notice. So, what's going on? Are they still in base matters? Like, what happened? You know, he asked the Sarusa. He says, "What's the clock?" He says, "Oh, it's 2:15. Oh, it's Erev Shabbos." You know, like, until it registered, you know, like, they sat two storm in, what happens? The older Bachman run the yeshiva. We had something called the Vabanei Yeshiva. It was the student council. Every shir had a representative which we would vote in. They would have monthly meetings, and they would deal with any issues which were running the yeshiva internally. Who was in charge of which jobs and how to do everything was decided by Babin Yeshiva. The older Bachram were given, I mean, if you picture older Bachram, I mean, Bachram came to Yeshiva for ninth grade, let's say, and he was there through finished high school. Beis Medrash, they had a very strange system of how they calculated the shiurim. Basically, there was something called a shiur lasted for 2 years. So Shir Aleph was 2 years, Shir Beis was 2 years, Shir Gimel was 2 years, Shir Dalet was until you got married. In those days, you know, a lot of guys didn't start dating until they're 23, 24. So when I came to the yeshiva, there was 30 Bochum who were Shir Dalet, second year Shir Dalet and up. Seems the guys were like 25, 26, you know. And they had been sitting and learning for post-high school for 8 years. So they were Tamid HaChamim. I remember when I first got married, so these guys are now, a lot of them were in Carlo still. The average stay in Carlo was about 10 years. So these guys were in Carlo. So they had the Medrash Vad. So we had her for a while, the Medrash Rad. So every Shabbos, one new I would have to say. So remember, it was my turn to say, and I'm saying a Medrash Rad, which was a 45-minute presentation on a Medrash in front of people who had been, you know, been saying on Medrash for 10 years. You know, the people who knew Pachad Yisro backwards and forwards, and I was scared out of my mind. You know, I prepared for 3 months for that first Medrash Rad. I can tell you over right now about the whole Medrash Rad. I remember I was partial Mishpatim, and I scoured for which Medrash to talk on, and I went back and forth and back and forth. I decided on a Medrash, and then I prepared the Medrash, and I said over to my first Edek Harusa, he was going out of his mind. I said, "Read this little Gemara, I have a shot in the Medrash, every time I could walk in with something about the Medrash, that's what happened to the first Seder, I think he knew the whole Medrash Balvad Balpeh by the time I was finished. Not just, my wife also knew the whole Medrash Balpeh. But there was older Bakrim, there was a lot of older Bakrim. She was before the Musa going there to learn was really, had sunk roots. So you walked in, there was guys, they were Tamina Chachamim. So we gave them Kavod. We were expected to give them Kavod. The Rashivas, gave them Kavod. The Rashivas would give them Kavod. I mean, mostly, Rashiv Reb Chaim, a Bakr would walk over to him, speak to him, learning. Any Bakr, any Bakr from Bar Mitzvah age and up, he would not sit down when he was talking to a Bakr. He would not be seated when he was talking to a Bakr. So if he was sitting, he would stand up and cover. A Bakr was learning Torah, he gave him cover. They're very big in yeshivas about the Nakuda of that. If you're learning Torah, that's a tremendous schus to be able to learn Torah. It's a tremendous cover, and you have to give yourself cover. You have to recognize who you were, what it meant to be for Bakr learning Torah. The older Bakr were authorized to, if a younger Bakr wasn't acting properly, they could kick him out of the dining room. They could walk over to Bakr and kick him out of the dining room, and the Rashivas would back the Bakr up. If an older Bakr kicked a younger Bakr out of the dining room, and he tried to come back in, the Rashivas would not let him in, because the older Bakr would kick you out. One of the Bakr, they gave us COVID. They gave us tremendous COVID. And it was a message, which we got from them all the time, of how much they respected what we were doing. And they wanted us to respect ourselves what we were doing. So we knew that they held of us, but they didn't compliment. But you said a good swara, you said a good kasha, you said something, or you dealt with an issue which was significant, and they felt you dealt with it in an intelligent way. They would compliment that. They didn't compliment, you're a good boy, you're a bad boy, there's no, you're a great guy. It was, you are what you are, but the kasha you said was a good kasha. The teretz is a good teretz. You should tell Rashi a good teretz to a kasha that he had. Sometimes, during shir, the same way he would tell you something that he wasn't happy with, he would tell you something he was happy with. One time, another shir, he said over a kasha, which is, he said it was bothering him for years. And one of the talmidim said a teretz. So Rashi got up in the middle of shir and started dancing with him. Well, sure, he started dancing with the Bakr. He says, "Baruch Hashem, I have a terrorist that's got it about me for years. He was so excited. I'm dancing with the Bakr, another shir." Nowadays, what would happen, of course, is everybody would pull out their phone to take pictures. We didn't know, the cell phones didn't exist, and I'm sure the Bakr, we all, the guys who were at the pictures was like, "I wish I had a picture," but another shir to see if she was, especially, he was so excited, he has a terrorist to Akash. So he just started dancing. But the Mahalak this year very much was that the atmosphere was the Bakrim. The atmosphere was the Yuga Light. I mean, when I came to Shiva, the Shiva was older Bakr heavy, and Kerala was small, like 20 guys. By the time I got married, there were 60 guys in Kerala. All those older Bakrim had gotten married and stayed. So there were 60 fellows in the Kerala. In my tshuva, there's like two guys got married. One other bracha got married in the tshuva about a year or two. There was just a lull. So, and there had been like a few years they hadn't any chassan. So like, I was thrown into this older group. Like, what am I doing here? Type of a thing. Like after me, a few guys joined fairly shortly after. It feels totally out of place. But the atmosphere made sense. Was the Yuga Light. You had Yuga Light. We're learning 10, some of the 10, 15, 20 years. Some of the older Yuga Light. And these were Yidden, they were Tamina Chachamim. But I wonder if there was Tamina Chachamim. There was a Yid, he moved out of the lake, but he's still sitting and learning. So I'm married over 30 years. So say he has to be married for 45 years. No, more than that. His oldest daughter was my wife's first 12th grade, the year we got married. So his oldest child. Yeshiva since I was 17, so he's been married 50 years already. So he's still sitting and learning. He's still sitting and learning Lakewood. So I remember one time I was shmoozing with him. He was sitting shiva for his one of his parents. I don't remember who, and there was nobody else there. So he wasn't very close. He saw me like, you know, he feels like this badly. He never got a position. Actually, I already was here. I was already in Silver Spring. And I went back to Menachem Oval. And, you know, like, you know, he never took a position. You know, he had a chance to be able to teach Talmidim and to impact Talmidim. And I said, if I recall correctly, you went and asked Rav Shach Zatzal this question X amount of years back. And Rav Shach Zatzal told him, he says, you know, you are teaching Talmidim. Your excitement, that they can look at somebody sitting learning for 20 years and he's still excited about Akash and about a terrorist and a pshat. I remember that his name was not your Yankel Katz. So I remember like the other times you'd see him. I remember one time I was sitting in my seat, I was near the door, and he was like all the way on the other side of the basement, all the way on the other side of the basement. I see him flying out the door. Right. Where's he running to? I don't know. Comes back about 10 minutes later, running into the door. He had written up a shikul Torah on the kasha they had, and he couldn't remember the shikul. He ran all the way home, ran all the way back. He walks in the basement and he screams across the basement to his karusa, "I have it!" You know, like, but it was alive to him. It was totally alive to him. And you know, the Bachram saw that. You know, so imagine the Bachram was in the 7-year-old Bachram disease, but that fellow who's 35 years old basically ran a mile. It was over half a mile each way. So he basically ran a mile in 10 minutes to go, and the fellow was not. There's but two me fit inside of him. But, you know, so I don't know. I wish it was like yeah, you know. But he was so excited about the shot that he, you know, he had worked something out. They couldn't help it. He screamed across base batters, like, you know, the whole base batters heard him. You know, and he was so excited. So Rav Shach one time told him, he says, "You have talmidim. You, a bocher sees it. That's what a young man looks like. That's what a young man is supposed to look like." We had a maisa once for Yungle Light. So the yeshiva had a night karlo. One night a week, all the Yungle Light were expected to go learn balabatim. So it was in Cleveland Heights. Yeshiva was way out from the city. Yeshiva was out in the middle of nowhere. It was a little dinky town called Wickliffe, Ohio. It has 22,000 people. I remember at the end of the year, one year I helped. You know, it's like the yeshivas had this European mentality. You know, you would. How do you survive? You comfort the policemen and so every year at the end of the year they would send a bottle of wine to all of the policemen of the town and all of the fire people, but by name. I remember this big box, two boxes of, you know, Kedem wine, and they would everybody had Chief Larry and, you know, Lieutenant so and so, and that was it, two boxes was the whole town, you know, like that was it, you know. It was the mayor, the all the mayor's secretaries and assistants and the policemen and the firemen and the whole thing, and every teller in the bank, you know, it was sent a box of chocolates, you know. It was that type of mentality. So it was a little dicky town. It was way out from the city. Now it's the city has expanded out to connect with, but then it was like much more out. It was a 25-minute, half an hour drive each way. It was a two-hour night call. So you would leave at 7:30, you get there at 8, you learn from 8 till 10, you would teach. You done Marv at 10. You get home 11 o'clock at night. So you killed your nights. So we had 60 of light in the car, and the shiva was mocked, every single person had to go, because the part of your cry is to learn the chiddush, you have to help other people. We didn't get paid a key, was that? We didn't get paid for the gas. It was all our own. You know, there was nothing paid. It wasn't, you know, we were paid for it. This is what every bachur in yeshiva was expected to have a young chavrus in the chinuch for free. It means every bachur in the base matters learned with somebody in the high school for 45 minutes every single night for free. That was standard. You were expected to do that because the bachur gives meiser from his time. You get Rashi is a truth about somebody asked about getting involved in kiruv. You know, the person was trying to develop kiruv. You know, he needed bachur to help. So Rashi said, "There's a chi of meiser. There's a chi of meiser." Chiyah Meiser in money, is a Chiyah Meiser in time. So that was a Marsha. The Tshuva. But I remember Baruch Zatzal. Baruch Zatzal was very into the, you know, Klal Unyanim, Baruch Zatzal. And he said every Baruch was able to give that. So young man, we went once a week. The Meiser was killed the night. So he went to Shir of Chaim to tie that. A group of us went to Shir of Chaim to tie the place, you know, that we can see if we can get out of this, you know. So he said in Yiddish, obviously, but he said, "I don't understand." He says, "So you come home at 11 o'clock and you learn till 1, like, you know, like, so you don't have 5 hours, you only have 2 hours." But that was his response. Like, you know, so he said, what young man goes to sleep before 1 o'clock in the morning? You know, every young man learns every night till 1 o'clock in the morning. So, like, you'll still have 2 hours to learn after you get home. Like, you have to talk to your wife. He says, yeah. You say hello to your wife for a few minutes. And you know, he said, oh, well, until 1 o'clock. Well, it's an aggressive mice. He wasn't typhus. So I walked out of there. I said, with somebody else in the group, I said, listen, I have no idea. We didn't accomplish what we wanted to accomplish. We definitely learned what the Shira's Musig of what it meant to be Yuga Man and Yishka in the Kerlel. That we learned. It was Klal, Rebbe, I mentioned Rebbe, it was you know, into Klal and Yonim. Rebbe himself was absolute genius. Out of all the Rashivas, he probably was the biggest genius. People have heard of Yitzchak Russell speak. He remembers everything. It's like he didn't have a photographic memory, but he had a Luyusha cup. He could absorb tremendous amounts of information. He used to come, and this is the day before computers. He used to come into the office, and look at the picture. The person who was the accountant for yeshiva, the certified public accountant for yeshiva. Yeshiva was one of the Bayim who never went to college. Who one day, Baruch called him and says, Yitzchak, we need somebody to be a counselor for Yeshiva. He says, no problem. 6 months later, he passed all 4 tests of the CPA and he became the accountant for Yeshiva. Now, if that was the accountant for Yeshiva, he was one of the Bayim Yeshiva, but on the side, he would go into the office and he would do the books, you know. So he says, when Baruch himself would walk in, you'd have a whole line of figures in Rebbe that you added up wrong. He would look at it and say, you added it wrong. It's wrong. That's how long it took him to calculate it. I mean, that type of Luyish guy. So he was involved. His father was the person who started Kinnon Katsumor. Rav Zalman Sorotskin, Luska Rav, was the person who was the head of Kinnon Katsumor in Eretz Yisrael. So when his father was Nifta, he became the head of all Kinnon Katsumor. After Reb Aaron was in America and Reb Lutzker Rav was in Eretz Yisrael, and then when they're both Nifter, Reb Baruch took over. So he ran all of Chinuch Hatzmoy, he dealt with all the Chinuch Hatzmoy issues. He was basically the person who ran the yeshiva. Out of all the yeshivas, he ran the yeshiva, took care of all the mummies for yeshiva. He said shir regularly. He did not go to sleep. He left over, he was Nifter, he left over thousands and thousands of pages of Chiddush Torah, notebooks and notebooks and notebooks, you know, loose leaves. He never went to bed before he wrote over all the Chiddush Torah's Mechadish that day. So you'd open up the notebooks and you'd see, you know, things written on napkins. He was by a Laguna convention, you know, and he was busy with Mechadish, a Pshat and the Rashba. You know, so you'd see the Pshat and the Rashba written on a napkin, you know, he went to a chasna, you know, but he would not go to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning. He would not go to bed until he finished writing over his Chiddush for that day. He wrote everything down. But Im Kozeh, he went to every Guru convention. He was very involved in Guru Sizzle. He felt that the Guru Sizzle was the vehicle which would allow to bring Torah into America and create a generation of B'nai Torah and a world for B'nai Torah. And it was interesting. He felt he was a shliach of the Bachur. I mean, she was very involved in the Guru. A Guru in America actually was worked all around. It started with Tzirei Guru Sizzle. Tzirei Guru Sizzle was the young men of the Guru Sizzle. It was which actually the Yeshiva Bachur. So we had a Tzirei. And Tzirei was the, you felt you had membership, you felt you were part of Klal Yisrael, and you could do things to help. Reb Baruch would go to the Guna Convention, he would speak, he would come back after the Guna Convention, he would give over the drasha he said at the Guna Convention. As our shluchim to the Guna Convention, he came back and he had to give a report of how the convention went. So he would say over his drasha, he'd give a report to the Bacharim of the issues which were addressed and how they addressed them. He felt that a Christ to give over it to us because we were the B'nai Torah of the generation. We're going to change the face of the generation. You carry the Christ of a generation. And he was our shluchim. He was the Mishnah Zazah. That was the attitude. We had even the Mechina Bacharim, there was something called Bachuria, Bachuria, so that we should have a Muslim that we're part of this worldwide organization, which its goal is to be Mechaz of Torah. And that's what that was the function of a Guru originally. And Eretz Yisrael also. Now it's changed its face. It became a political party. It's a little more difficult. In America, that's what its purpose is. We don't see it as much anymore because we're much more established. I mean, but in those days it was. So these older bokharim, you know, they set a tone in yeshiva. It was Mishnah of the Gazach. Like, the tone in yeshiva was sitting and learning is Gishma. So, in my days, there was no off Shabbosim. There was no off Shabbosim. You know, Pesach was off, and Sukkot was off. Summer was off. There's no such thing as an off Shabbos. Your gifter used to, when they came out, this is Torah is the breath of life. So you want to take a break from breathing. You want off from Ottoman. You just have an off from Ottoman. I don't understand what the words mean. So we 6 months went there, you learn for 6 months straight. You didn't leave yeshiva for 6 months. So how do you do it? So firstly, yeshiva campus was 60 acres. It was 60 acres, the campus. On the campus of the yeshiva, there was the base medrash. There was the dorm was in a different building. The dining was a different building. The high school building was a different building. The mechina base medrash was a different building. A gym. There was a baseball field. There was a football field. There was a soccer field. There was a pool which wasn't usually only filled up in the summer. And there was the gym, which you know you could play basketball in the gym. So there was what to do on the campus. You didn't have to go off campus. The yeshiva encouraged it. The yeshiva had a bookstore, a swarm store on campus in the basement of the dorm. They had a barber, one of the balabatim would give haircuts. There was a person who made shtendras down there. There was a laundry mat down in the basement. Cleaners. There was a cleaner system, a dry cleaner system. But the few brachim were in charge of it. They would give your stuff at the beginning of the week, and then the company would come and pick it up, and they'd deliver it back on Thursday night. The brachim would sort it out, and Friday you'd pick up your stuff and have your stuff for Shabbos. There was what's called a haberdashery, which sold paper, pens, scarves, gloves, mittens, earmuffs. Whatever you needed, it was all there. They sold stamps. In those days, you know, most communication, you had to send communication long distance. You did it with stamps. You know, aerograms. You probably never even saw an aerogram in your life. You ever heard of an aerogram? Aerogram was basically it was an envelope which folded onto itself. It was a very thin paper. So the post office charged less for an airmail. Overseas, you send an aerogram was much cheaper than sending a regular envelope of this day. So you had a bucket from Australia, he couldn't call home. And in those days, a call to Australia was $5 per minute. It was between $3 to $5 per minute. That was a phone call to Australia. So you didn't call home. I mean, unless there was a chasson, there was you know, tremendous you know, emergency or the. The simcha they call it a mazel tov. You get it like a minute call, you know, 2 minute call, you know, and you sit there with a pad beforehand. You work out exactly what you're going to say because you don't want to waste any time, you know. And of course, the first 2 minutes, do you hear me? Yes, I hear you. You know, that the first time, the first 30 seconds, and the phone call was wasted with that. But so they sold stamps. So everything was there. A doctor came in once a week to see the bachim who weren't well. And there was a person in charge called the Vada Breeze. There was a person in charge of Vada Breeze, which he was the only Brooklyn she was allowed to have a car. And if he had to take the Brooklyn to a doctor, he would take him to the doctor. So she would pay him and he'd take him to the doctor. You didn't need to leave. You didn't leave the campus. But they created an atmosphere that, why, you know, that was geschmack to be in. It was geschmack. It wasn't like we didn't do other things. I mean, we did other things also, but the musik that. The musig of that you sit late at night, and you sit like what's more, you know, it's geschmack. I remember one time Matzah Yom Kippur. So this after Rishiva been in Eretz Yisrael, so he been in Eretz Yisrael. So there was a few Israeli bachim who came joined Telstone when the gifter was in Eretz Yisrael. So they stayed in Eretz Yisrael. One of them, you know, missed the gifter very much. He came for Elul Zman. So this bachim had a voice. You know, you've never heard the likes of such a beautiful voice that he had. Powerful, beautiful voice. So his plan was to come to America. He'll get a shtel as a chazan somewhere, you know, that'll pay for his trip. Maisa didn't work out. He didn't want to leave yeshiva for Yom and the Roim. So he stayed. So I remember, I was in charge of I used to take care of the Ka'aris, the Stoka Ka'aris, Erev Kippur, out on the Bima. So we had for our Bachar Masagim, we had a few $1,000 went through those covers Erev Yom Kippur, and I would put it away. But Yom Kippur, I would be misadder all of the mamadas, etc. So I'm sitting late at night, the only guy in base matter, up in the office doing all the work. And also, I hear this fellow, Moshe Turk, I hear Moshe down. He came to base matter to sit and learn. He sat and learned for 2 hours, you know, learning Gemara out loud with his beautiful voice for 2 hours straight. I couldn't leave. I was doing my work, but I couldn't leave. But that was normal. Why would you want to sit and go to base matters? Nobody's there. And the Geshmak, nobody's there. And you sit and you sing the Gemara out loud. And you would sing it out loud. And so we stay late at base matters. Somebody asked, what do I do in night seder? It's a funny question. What do you do in night seder? You look to work in first seder. What else do you do in night seder? We used to do about a lot a week first seder. And you have to use a scream at us, and that's going so slow. So the only way you could learn a lot of week first seder is you spent the whole night seder working. And, you know, so you would we learned them. One of the Bachurim from the high school, from the Binyan Mechina, from 8 to 8:45. And by 9 o'clock, you know, you'd come back from the high school, you sit down, and you would learn till 1, 2 in the morning. And you would work on first seder. You'd chazer it over. You'd chazer. The Yeshiva was very into chazorah. It was a good chinuch from the machina already. Machina was even faster for Seder, because I look back and I try to picture how we did it. But the rebellion, every week there was a chazorah sashur, so you would learn Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was new Gemara, and you'd do be'erich a blot plus a week for Seder, and then Thursday, Friday was chazorah every week. And at the end of this month, there was Chazor again. But besides that, we were in the Mechina, there was no Bekiah Seder. So we went fast, but there was no Bekiah Seder. But, we prepared the Gemara for Seder. Even the lowest, I picture that. I was expected to prepare the Gemara for Seder to go into Shir. Shir was an hour and 20 minutes long. Ninth grade. Shir was an hour and 20 minutes long. And then you spent the whole morning preparing before, you prepare the Gemara beforehand. You go to Shir, you learn it. You chazer second seder, you chazer night seder. So you did it 4 times that day. The end of the week, you would chazer over again. You would do it 4 times again. So you did it 8 times already. The end of the week, you'd learn the Gemara 8 times. Then the end of the Zman, you would do it again, the same thing. So again, so you did it. So you did it Gemara, every Gemara 12 times. L'chol apachas. Then you wanted to get a good grade of Bechinas. So you'd chazer. So then there was guys, the night before Bechinas, we took Bechinas with such a serious, I'm not sure how they did it, Bechinas, the Bachurim wore Shabbos suits and ties. The Bechinas, white shirts, Shabbos suits and ties. The Bechinas. The other man, the Shivas would come in. There was no written Bechinas. It was an oral book fair. You got one question. That was your grade for this man. So the motivation was you got to know everything perfect. You're written Bechinas. You get some more, some less. You got one question. So, and the Rishivas would come, and they would come in sets of three. So I remember it was either Reborach and Gifter together with Rav Isaac was one group. Rishiv Rav Chaim, Rishiv Rav Pesach, and the Rosh Machin, Rav Levi was the other group. So you got one or the other. And you used to daven, you should get Rav Chaim and Rav Pesach and Rav Levi, and not Rav Gifter, Reborach, and Rav Isaac. That was that's part of the tefillah that you would have. Rosh, please, And they would come in, and they'd ask you in Yiddish one question. You look at Rebbe and say, what did he say? And he translated it to you for English. Sometimes Rebbe would give you a little bit of a hint sometimes in the translation. Now, Rashivas weren't stupid because they understood English perfectly. But they usually looked away, And you would answer. So the night before Bechinas, the guys didn't sleep. The whole 2 weeks of Chazorah, there was guys who was up to 1, 2, 3, chazing the Gemara over again, out loud, Balpeh. Every Bachar, you'd chazer again. You know the whole parak Balpeh. So the Mechina was the Chazer and the Chazer and the Chazer and the Chazer. Thursday night was Mishnah. What did you do Thursday night? You Chazer the whole week. Thursday night, the goal of Thursday night was everything you learned. We didn't have Mishnah and Mechina. They very much we should go to sleep by a normal time. By Beis Medrash, we had Mishnah. So you already had, a Bekiah Seder, second Seder. So the goal was everything you learned the whole week, first Seder and second Seder, Gemara, Rashi, Rishonim, etc., Rashi, Tosfos, Rishonim, you would chaz over one more time before you went to bed Thursday night. That was the goal. That was the purpose of Mishmar, to get one more chazorian before the end of the week. And it wasn't to stay up late to learn something else. We had no, you know, we'd learn something, you know, but between first and second, you'd do about 100 bodies a year. And you would 100 bodies a year. It was very frustrating because we had no, intels, they never mechanized me to finish a mesechtus. There was no chinuch to finish a mesechtus. It's like strangest thing, I don't know why. Like, there was like, and by the time I was 22, I never finished any, I finished Megillah. Like, you know, that was almost, I learned 100 blad of Mekama, 100 blad of Metzia. Like, I'm missing 19 blad. You know, so finished, but we had no chinuch to finish a mesechtus. That was so I came to Yigamad, I said, hey, this is Loi Zuh Derech, I need to start working on, finishing the mesechtus, completing mesechtus. So, but till then, but you would chazur against, you would stay late. You would, guys would stay late at night. Now we had a chanuk besiba. You had a perm. You had malva malka. You make a malva malka probably 4 or 5 times a winter. You make a malva malka. Shevruch was in yeshiva. Shevruch was like this. In chasa, you had rishus to invite. The yeshiva was very makba in the bachram not going away. So you had rishus for 12 bachram to your chasa. So you were given a Rishima of the net bracham that you wanted to the Rosh Hashiva, Rosh Hashiva Reb Chaim, and he would okay yes or no if he's masking those bracham should go. Then the bracham would have to go ask him Rishus if they could go. Like after he okayed it already, they would go ask Rishus, and then you're talking about a time, from the original Rishus to the second Rishus, Lav Dafka got Rishus. Chas was in New York, so Cleveland to New York is 480 miles. So theoretically, cars, you could do it in 8 hours. So you had Rishus, you would have 36 hours of Rishus for a Chas in New York. So it means you had a choice like this: you could either drive through the night of the night before the Chas, you'd have the day in New York to do something. Chas, then you drive back the next night. You have to be there by Shachris the following morning. Or, if you don't want to drive through the night, you drive the day at a chas, sleep overnight, and drive back the next day. Bezehu, right? So your chas was 12 bachim. You'd come back to yeshiva for shabrach, because you would have 300 bachim at a shabrach. There was music, and there was no women. I mean, there was women, someone would come, but there was no women's dancing. So basically, it was 300 people dancing together for about an hour straight. So it made the chasna look like boring. There was excitement. So you had excitement with that. You had the Purim. It was a Purim spiel. So it was done actually in those days live, not by video. And there was signs of Mes Medrash. Clever. There was a Purim paper which was put out beforehand, which was responsible for a tremendous amount of Bittul Torah for a few weeks beforehand. very well written. There was Raman by the Purim Suda until 1 year it got a little bit too sharp against Rosh Hashivas, and that was the end of Raman by the Purim Suda. Whatever, I'm not getting involved in the politics of why it happened, that's what happened. So there's things to break them, and but the Muslim, why would you want to leave? There was yeshiva was so geschmack and so warm and so much. You wanted to be there. You wanted to be. Beis Medrash was geschmack. Thursday night, Friday night, all the bachim were invited out. We'd have after the city, we'd have yugalite. Groups would go to different yugalite homes, and we'd have what's called Musar Vada, Musar Chabura. You'd have Musar Chabura for and the wife would serve something to eat. You sit, you learn something together. You choose. When I did it, I had a bachur. You stay over. It was more cozy there. So he'd sleep out on the couch. And that was not every Friday night. Come on, he stayed. Actually, I was just an aside. I hadn't seen him for about 25 years. So I was by Ailey's chasna in Antwerp, and I'm talking to someone over there. He says. So the name came up. He says, I haven't seen him since. So he's here by the chasna. So we spent the next morning together for about four hours. It was much of Ben Bais. I mean, I hadn't seen him in 20, 25 years. But, 25 years makes sense. 25 years. So but that was, and we, the people did it before us, the people did it before us. So there was a lot of warm, cozy things, but the most geschmack thing was sitting in Beis Medrash. Beit HaStorm, there was Olam Beis Medrash, Erev Shabbos, the Shivas encouraged us to play. We didn't play the whole week. It wasn't so much playing going on the whole week, but Erev Shabbos, there was guys who played baseball, guys who played football, there was always, you know, things going on. It's interesting. Reb Gifter was an American, and he had the Americanisms, you know, at least the jargon for sure. The baseball field was right next to the path, which went from the Beis Medrash to the Shiva's homes. So, out there, you wouldn't play when the Shiva would walk by. You wouldn't play. So, when the Shiva would come and walk by, we would stop. You know, the Shiva would walk by. The Shiva would walk by. He said, "Reb Gifter would walk." He'd stop. He says, "Play ball." Certain flavor that Reb Gifter had that the other Shivas couldn't. Spiel and ball doesn't have the same nusach. It just doesn't have the same nusach. Somebody has asked me recently, what was Beis Medrash? There was no Marmar Karmas. All the Marmar Karmas swarm didn't exist yet. You know, all the cheat swarm weren't out there yet. So till and halfway through Shir Aleph. Through Shir Aleph, you had regular Shir. So Shir Aleph started basically. You started Shir Aleph at the beginning of 12th grade. You moved to Beis Medrash. So by about that year, and then by the end of the next year, you're ready. You're in Shir Beis. Shir Beis, there was no Blatcher. It was a Pilpa Shir once a week. What did you learn for Seder? Tough luck. Figure it out. You know, here's a big pool. There's a deep end. Splash. Swim. Or sink. That's your problem. You know, if you need help, come and ask for it. But no, they didn't offer you, Marmar Karmas beforehand and what to figure out what to learn. And for the first 6 months to a year, you would sit there and you would flounder trying to figure out how to learn. But it was very hard. But you would ask people to help, but you would try to figure out, what Rishonim is important to Shtel on, what not supposed to Shtel on. What's the important thing? You come to Shabbat, you missed an important Ksois that everybody else had seen. You didn't see the Ksois. You didn't see the Kamegar. You didn't chop the Nakuda and the Sugga, the important. Important the Pnei Yeshua over here. You got used to, you had to try and figure everything out yourself. It was hard, very hard. But the chinuch was, you can do it, you're a big boy, you can do it. And you did it. It took a while. Some guys needed more help than others. The guys who were better at it would turn out to help the guys who weren't. And I floundered. And I wasn't stupid. And I floundered for the first 9 months. First 9 months, I was like, I don't know what to do for Zedder. You try to do too much, do too little, too slow, too fast. It took a while to figure it out. And, a little bit of male ego. You don't want to ask the guy next to you. You want to see if you can figure it out yourself. But you got it. And then you would spend the night time riding over and working over and thinking over and looking up and trying to revire and getting a claw, and causing over a knuckleball. Chazor became so sweet. It was hard to want to do Lainus. By the tenth time you learn the Gemara, it's so geschmack. The things are falling into place. You chaz it over, okay, now all these things, you chaz over a perik, you keep chazing over from the beginning of the perik and try to make sure that makes, as things start fitting into place, you'd have 6, 8, 10, 12 blot, 14 blot, and they would fit. You saw the beginning, you saw the end, you saw a picture, and all of a sudden, that's a Rashi meant. That's what, and it was so geschmack that you want to keep chazering, and you'd keep, the Rishivas would have masibas in the house, not on a regular basis, but a gift of a hand, granted it pretty often. We have a chibur of 5-10 guys. He would have them over Friday night. He would have a chibur over. And the Rebbetzins were, part of them all was being close to getting connection to Rishiva the Rishivas in a more intimate way. But part of them all was the Rebbetzins. The Rebbetzins were it tells, the tells were really the Rebbetzins. Reb Gifter and Reb Pesach married Reb Zalman Bloch's daughter, and Reb Isaac and Reb Baruch married Reb Risach Bloch's daughter. Right? And Reb Lezer Sabrotskin married Reb Elamer's daughter. So that's how they became part of the family. So the only person who was there in his own right, Reb Shira Klein, was not part of the family, but he was,
it was Shiva Chaim. But the Rebbetzins, I mean, Knan Horus, some of them, you know, you go to a Rishir of Isaac for a Suda. Rebbetzin Osband is, I can tell you, is most fascinating woman you'll ever, fascinating people you'll ever meet in your life. She's a woman, she was with her father at the last moments of the ghetto. When his father says he wants to prepare for the end, he wants to learn the Gemara of Kiddush Hashem, she read the Gemara to him. He was too weak to hold the Gemara. So she read the Gemara to him. She came to, you know, lost her father, lost her mother. She got out, her older sister, Rebbetzin Sorotskin, got out, you know, got out much earlier. She got out before, you know, before the Nazis came in. Rebbetzin Osband was the most brilliant woman, brilliant person, down to earth. Like she created Yavne Seminary, so like she could walk in and you could tell the girls, like, listen, you know, girls, I'm a woman, I like beautiful clothes just like you like beautiful clothes. Like, she had no compunction to say that, you know, I'm normal. She also, one time the girls asked, like, what was the happiest day of your life? So here's a woman who survived the war. She, you know, she married an Adam Gadol Batera. Her son Rav Osband is the Rashiba in Riverdale. You know, a brilliant person. He started learning Gemara. He was 6 or 7. He started learning Gemara. He was reading Aleph Beis. By the time he was reading Aleph Beis before he was 2. He started learning Gemara. He was, I think, 6 or 7. He was in the Mechina. He was in the first year of the Mechina. Like, Kwakam was 13, 12, 13, 14. He was 7 years old. You know, like, it's not surprising, you know, between his parents and the chinuch that she put into him, you know. The girl asked her, what was the happiest day of your life? She said to the girls, she thought, she says, the day that I thought I was exactly to be killed by Kiddush Hashem was the happiest day of my life. Like, you really should do a different league of a person. That's the happy day of your life. I mean, kill a Kiddush Hashem. That's the suicide. She was, you know. But she was on vat herself to her husband. I mean, Amish, every word that he said, she was in the kitchen, and he would say, every word she was listening. All of a sudden, you hear this voice in the kitchen, but Rav Isaac, Rav Shiva. You know, she would say to him, you know, but I, you know, I remember 27 years ago, you said not like that. I mean, she was listening. She was mamash listening to everything he said. Everything. She's made herself a talmid of her husband. Like, he's bowless to Torah. That was the thing that we know from her home in Europe. It was, you know, the most... there's an awesome story about... So Rav Yitzchak Bloch and Rav Zalman Bloch and Rav Elamir Bloch was 3 brothers, and then there was a sister who Ramotel Katz had married the sister. Hence Ramotel Katz became Rashi Ben Telz. Rav Yitzchak Bloch and Rav Zalman Bloch married sisters. So 2 brothers married 2 sisters. So they married the daughters of a person named Ramayaman Banish Dennis. His last name was Dennis. He was a balabas, he was a gavir. He single-handedly supported Telz Yeshiva for a couple of years. They didn't have any money, he supported them. He supported the Vardik, he supported Sabotka, and he supported all the yeshivas. So my son, Rav Chanan came to him one time. It was a very rainy day outside. It was muddy outside because the roads, they didn't have roads, they didn't pave roads. It was dirt, it was mud. So Rav Yaman Benish had a very nice house. He was a gavir. So Rav Chanan felt horrible. He just slept the mud into the house. He went and knocked on the side door. He shouldn't have slept the dirt into the house. It's one of the storybooks they have. They have the story. I heard it from Rebbetzin Osband, who, you know, heard it from her mother. You know. So Rav Yaman Banish opened. Here's a knock on the side door. He opened the door, and Rav Chanan is there. He starts. He almost faints. He says, Rebbe, why are you coming? Why are you coming through the front door? Like the Kavanah Torah. He says, I don't want to schlep the mud through your house. So Rav Yaman started crying. Tears coming down his face. He says, Rebbe, please don't do this to me. Please don't do this to me. Please come through the front door. He says, I don't want to treat the Rashiva, but please come through the front door. So Lachlan says, you know, why? He says, you don't understand. My children are growing up in the lap of luxury. They have a tremendous amount of money, etc. I want them to know that that's not what's important in life. What's important in life is Torah. If the Rashiva comes to the side door, what we're saying is that the carpet and the furniture is more important than Torah. But that cannot be the message to my children. I don't betray to Rashiva, but please, he's crying. The daughter, she remembers her father said, they're crying. Please, please, just do me a favor. Please go to Rashiva. Come to the front door. And track the mud all over my carpet. Please do that. Put the mud onto my fancy chair. Use it down. If my daughter should see, that's not what important. The chair is important. The Torah is important. So such a yid was able to have to get, you know, two sons-in-law to, you know, Gedali Torah. So that these are the rabbits. You know, so we would go to the rabbits. And, Lazar Taka goes every Friday night. He goes to Rebbetzin. And the Rebbetzin Gifter. Can I know? She's in her 90s. She's totally sharp. There's a group of about four or five bachelors. Like every Friday night after this, they go to the Rebbetzin. And they each one has a says a Dvar Torah. And then she critiques them. She tells her. Right? She critiques them. And they sing Zmira. They sing them, you know, the bachelors sing. She gives them something to eat. And then, you know, she says, I'm my sister. She says, a different Torah, machshavas that she has, different things that she shares with them. Like, you know, just because she's a woman, she's Isha Gedola, you know. Rebson Gift is the same thing. Brilliant woman. She was Mashamash, her husband. Especially at the end, she was sick for 15 years. He was sick. You know, just like, she took care of him. She, you know, Rebson Osman, the same thing. Isaac got very sick at the end. She quit school. This brilliant woman. It's just that my goal in life is my responsibility is to take care of my husband. I married him because I was able to help him learn Torah. Take care of him, that's what I'm going to do. And she dropped everything and just went to seclusion, basically. I also used to go Matzis Shabbos with the group of people used to go Matzis Shabbos to Rebbe Zinnosman. Rabbi Isaac was there to say Abdullah for him. And spend some time there also. Thank you. Just you get a shaykhus to such people. So these are the houses. The Rebbetzins were all sharp-witted. I mean, some of them are sharper than, like my wife, more sharper than I am. So, you know, the same way. It tells them a story. You know. They were so sharp. They say a line, the Baruch would say a line, they give you a line back. It's like, whoa, you know. But their world was the world of Torah. Once there was a woman came to visit my wife told me to Maisa. A woman came to visit. This is a survivor from Tells. Came to visit. And this woman, like, you know, she was quoting chazals left and right, etc. You know, just like throwing out chazals and psukim, etc. So after she left, Rebbe Zinnosman said, he says, you know, the woman Betzim is she's an Amos Oris. She doesn't know anything. He says, but in Europe, that's how they spoke. The language in Tells, you know, we have English phrases that we use. We talk about the phrases that they used were chazal. She doesn't know the chazals from the Makar. She has the chazals from the street. The Nusach Adibur was you know, you know, Tanai Mil Sakriti, you know, she knew the Gemara, but she knew Tanai Mil Sakriti, you know. And he said, you want to make it the range, that's a different story. That's how she used it. But the Nusach came out like that, you know. Hazmona Mil Sihi. Right, if you invite somebody, as one of Milsim means a sugya with them more about whether you designate something to be used, get kedusha or not. Over there, you invited somebody for a visit, as one of Milsi, you invited somebody that's something also, you know. But they used all the chazals for their, you know, that's how they spoke. You know? So it's like, you know, psukim were used, you know, that was a nusach hadibur. So they carry that over to their houses, to their children. To the mitzvah about the yeshiva was mind boggling. You know, we were zeichet to see a generation which was way beyond. But I remember my first year I was summer spring. So I was 23 years in Tel Aviv. And that's all I knew. You know, I didn't know anything else. But what did I know about Yom Neroyim? I'd never been in the shul for Yom Neroyim before I became Frum. I'd never been there. And I knew the yeshiva. 23 years of, you know, tells yeshiva. So besides that, I still can't get the nusach over here straight because the nusach over there is different. Now I'm confused. I don't know either nusach. Right? I have a little bit of both. But I remember, like, standing by the mizrach, you know, by up in the. In those days, none of you were in here then. We had the four trailers in the back, right? The dining room trailer. You were here for the dining room trailer. Remember when we used to eat dining room in the yeah? So you remember the year we davened Yom Teruah all the way in the back trailer on the left? No, that must have been. That's before your time. So there was this trailer in the back. That's where we davened Yom Teruah, and we packed everybody into there. And I'm down there, you know, with the quote unquote mizrach vans. You know, Rebaron myself, and Rebbe Yitzchak, and Rebbe Katz. I think that was it. Maybe Rebbe Tadlon was there also, I think. And I'm picturing the mizrach vans themselves, Yom Teruah. I'm just like, what am I doing here? You look at that mizrach vans, you look at the amount of Torah that these people learned, and the amount of the hasmara that they had, and the amount of, you know, your shemayim and the ideas and the responsibility for Klal Yisrael and the varmkeit and the it was, one Rebbe was just actually just retired. He just retired. He moved to Lakewood. Shlomo was the youngest of all the Rebbeim in Yeshiva. So he wasn't so young anymore when I came. He wasn't so young. He was middle aged already, but he was youngest. And he would sit on the Roim and he would learn Musar from it. I'll tell you what he learned Musar from. He learned in Ponyevich. During the Six-Day War, he was learning in Ponyevich. Okay? So they sent, basically, they sent all the American Bachram, you know, the parents, you know. Okay? Some of you have read about the Six-Day War. The Six-Day War was, you know, see, Arabs have a way about themselves. Nasser was going to take revenge for the 56, what happened in 56, where they got, you know, got defeated. So he made this he united himself with Syria. They made the United Arab, whatever it was called. And, you know, with him in charge, of course. Right? And he started mobilizing troops. And he started putting tanks and troops at the border. Now, the border, you know, is where it is now. It's, you know, it was right there. Right there, just next to Eretz Yisrael. Right? There was, they were on that side of the Sinai Peninsula at that point in time. And he said, you know, he made no qualms about saying that he's gonna drive every single Jew into the sea, and the rivers and the streets of Tel Aviv will flow with blood. I mean, he was very, very kind to the fellow. So you had Jordan was keeping quiet, but Jordan had the best army of all of them because Jordan had the Arab Legion, which was trained by the British. So Jordan had the Arab Legion. Right? Syria was massing troops. Again, this is, Golan didn't exist then. Like, that was part of Syria. Right? And Egypt was massing troops, and they were getting more belligerent. And then, you know, of course, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Entente. So Nasser tells the peacekeepers, the UN peacekeepers, to leave, and he says, okay. He takes them away. You know, that's great peacekeepers. And any parents who could get their kids out were trying to get their kids out. So the matzah was pachah b'chorim. Pachah b'chorim doesn't describe it. Basically, it was going to be al pidarach teva, the Jews were outnumbered 10 to 1. That was basically the ratio, which much better. Armed, they were armed by the Soviets already. Then everything, the Jews had very little. So the Matzim and Ponyevich, the Rapatzel sent Shmuzin, you know, the Mimar Oilam to do tshuva, etc. Tremendously powerful Shmuzin. So there's a contrast of those Shmuzin. I have it at home. It's a paperback, you know. You ever seen stencils? You know, stencils, the real stencils look like, they look like, you know, it's a piece of paper you would type on in a Hebrew typewriter. And it would go through, like it go through onto the back, and it would print out on the page behind it. It was called stencils. It was formed like a bunch of like a stencil. It's printed as stencils. The shmuzin he said before the war. The shmuzin he said two shmuzin, the three shmuzin during the war, and the two shmuzin he said after the war for the Hidah to Kadosh Baruch. So Reb Shloimeh would take out that kuntres. It's the most powerful kuntres. His Musa was extremely powerful, extremely heavy. One of the other Rebbeim, Rav Barkin Zichli Bracha, who learned in Panyevich, says you go to Rav Shmuel Rav Chatzkel, you come out like this big. He would really push very stark. But those shmuzim were like, something you say, a shmuz is like a sledgehammer. Every sentence was a sledgehammer. But what was the choice? Betzim, Peter and Tevor were all going to be joining either Gan Eden or Gehenna in the next 3 days. That's, you have the picture, that's what it was. So you should prepare for your end and do tshuva. And if it was, the Russians will do an ace for clients, but we can't rely on them. It was like very, so Shlomo would take out that kuntres, the little kuntres, and he would start learning it during Musa Seder, during Elul. But before Tekiyas, he would take, he would sit in his car, he would face forward, and he would learn with his Musa Nigin and cry his heart out. I mean, you hear this like, oy vey, vey, vey. The whole, and he was loud. The whole base matters, you go through your kishkas. Every, on Yom Kippur, every time there's a break, there was a free moment, you take it out and he would go out with his musa nigin, but tears running down his face. So that was the Mizrachavat. Looking at that Mizrachavat, I was like, what am I doing here? How do you give over? First of all, I want it myself. I miss it. I'm playing rabbi. So it's just like, the kids, you dress up and you play mommy and play tante, I was playing rabbi. I still am. But how do you give over what you got? How do you give over that I saw something which was way beyond. And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way I can convey it, because I know Rav Gifter used to do it sometimes. Rav Gifter would say, he says, Bochum, what can I tell you? He says, I saw Gersa Tamid Chacham, Gersa Rebbeim, and used to just see me. We used to laugh at him. Come on, who are you kidding? Right? So, I'm in the same situation. I'm serious. He's like, oh, he's more Nevis. I'm really serious, more Nevis. Nevis, you don't understand. We saw a world, and that world was, the Rishivas used to push us. Have sheifas to know. Have sheifas to know well. I took a bechina by Rashiba. Seth is the dorm. Sorry, 22, I finished the dorm. The dorm is Gemara Ran. So the Ran is much longer, but it's much easier than Rashi. So the Shiva used to go very fast in the dorm. Used to go over 2 blot a week. The dorm was like 2 blot a week per Seder. So the dorm was a summer's month and an Elul's month. That was it. I finished the dorm. I figured if I'm not gonna chazer it well, I'm not gonna hold on to it. I finished 90 blots, it was an accomplishment. So I went to Shiva Chaim, asked him if I can have a fahir after Sukkot Ben Hazman, I'm on the Vesavta. So there was no official bechina program. I mean, like, why not? It'll be mechayiv me to, I have to chaser. I have to chaser well. If I'm going to take a bechina a 90 blot, I've got to chaser it well. So he said, fine. He says, I asked Rav Gifter. Rav Gifter says, fine. He said, I and Rashi Rav Chaim, we'll give you a fair after Ben Hazman. So we set a date. So that was it. The die was cast. I had a chaser over 90 blot in 15 days. Which included the first, the simplest Torah, Shemini Atzeres, and Hashanah Rabbah, and the first days of Sukkot, the traveling to New York and back, everything, the whole thing. And it was 6 blot a day, and I had it all well. I walk in, the first question the gift asked me, he says, there's a diak in Iran from somewhere in the Masechta to this and this shayla. There's a halacha shayla like this and this and this. There's a diak in Iran somewhere in the Masechta. What's the diak? That's what he expected us to know. You know the Masechta. No, that means you can pull out a diak and run anywhere in the Masechta. That's what meant. No, that was his misogyny. That's what meant to know Masechta. It's like, so Bereshit was nice to me. Bereshit, I knew that answer. So I answered it. So Bereshit was even nicer to me because Rav Gifter liked the Diyuk, but Rav Shira Chaim didn't like the Diyuk. So two of them started fighting. So Gifter says, that's a good situation. Rav Shira Chaim says, but it says, oh, so Gifter says, good. So I had a 5-minute break. What? So I figured, like, why not? I threw my 2 cents also. So I had a raya one way or other. So I threw my 2 cents. And what happened was, so the next 45 minutes, there was a talking and learning in a masechta with two reshivas. Now, I just chazed the whole masechta over. They didn't just chaz over the masechta, but they were pulling out diukim and rayas from the rans throughout the whole masechta to the kashas back and forth. You know, different kashas, reshivas, and noch a kasha. And he was talking and learning in a masechta. That's what it meant to know a masechta. You know, it was like, that was... And he went to tell Stone, you know, they learned Baba Basra. He did the same thing in Baba Basra with the Bukharim. And that's not 90 blood, that's 175 blood. Like, and it's Rashbam, which is has the length of the Ram, but it's harder like Rashi. You know, like, and he was, you know, asking kashas like that throughout the Masechta. On the Bukharim, it took him for hair. And again, it wasn't official. You know, the Bukharim asked for it, so the. You ask for it, you'll get it. You know, like, we'll give you a machina. But we'll sing it where, like, you know, like, so obviously you had a chaz, your kishka's out. You had a chaz again and again and again. You know, not just, you know, read the, you know, run through it, but like, you know, but, you know, speak it out. When I write down ha'aris, write down kashas, you know, you chop the teretz, write it down, you know, speak it out. You know, and that's what we did. You're a day machina. So the bechina was shechita and treifas, basa becholam and tarubas. It was done in two parts. Shechita and treifas was one, basa becholam and tarubas was the other. So it was like every shach and every taz. The bechina was open, but it wasn't really open because you didn't have time to look anything up. Officially, you had your day with there with you, but like, you know, but the next question was next. You know, there was, and you answer the question, you go right there. You know, but you know, you could look it up. You know, somebody you want to read the nusach says, oh, you know, but it was. I mean, I remember there was one the young light older than me. Actually, he took the bechina. Everybody took the bechina. He took the bechina the day that I took my Nadorim bechina. He took his bechina Yeruday. That was a bocher still. He was already married a few years. Like, you know, you kept chazering, so the more you chazered, the quicker you could go through it. At the end, he was chazering 100 blot of your day in a day. You used to count them at the speed of chazor by blot. So at the beginning, you know, you're doing like, you know, one blot a day, two blot a day, three blot a day, four blot a day. You kept building yourself up. So before the beginning, he chazered over, I think, the week before the beginning, 100 blot, the whole 100 blot every day. You know, it's just every shach, every taz, you know. I mean, you can't read it that fast. You know, through his mind, you go through, you know, page by page. That's what it meant to take a bechina. You know, and the Rishivas used to, you know, say that was nothing compared to the bechina in Europe. The bechina in Europe was you know, was a totally different league, you know, totally different ballgame. I was once talking to my Rebbe, Rav Shalom Shapiro. And they're talking about, you know, he told me, he says, you know, the Bukharim now is doing a blot a week, you know. He says, he remembers Summerzman when they did Baba Basra, Samer Chasina, they started Ayin Hay. Summerzman was Rosh Chodesh Iyar, it's all of Iyar, all of Sivan, Tel stops, last day was Chav Tamas, the last 2 weeks was Chazor. So Vav Tamas was the last day of Leilus. So it was 2 months and 1 week. So that's 9 weeks. In 9 weeks, he did from Ayin Hay to Kuf Hay. He did 30 blot for a Seder in 9 weeks. So, you know, so I'm not talking about, the issue wasn't the speed. The speed is much a little slower nowadays. A little bit, just a little bit. But the kuda was that it was, the only way it was shaykh was because, you know, you spent every, you copped the rind. You stopped the run every extra moment you had, you know. We relaxed. During lunch, we relaxed, and it was guys who, you know, took the guys took naps during lunch. Some guys took naps during lunch, which when I was younger, I didn't used to do it. And I was, and one day I said, "Oh, let me try it." the stupidest mood I ever made in my life. And you know, you got into a habit. Now it's very hard for me to get out of that habit. I should say, I didn't get a nap today, and it affects me. Like, you know, I'm not used to, I'm used to have that lull, like 1 o'clock. You know, right? It's fun. My family jokes. My Shabbos suit at 1 o'clock. I was, you know, it's part of my body, my circadian rhythm. But you know, guys would take a walk. Guys would, you know, air out a little at lunchtime. There was a canteen on campus where you could go. There was soda. There was danishes. There was, you know, stuff to buy. Guys would buy something. You know, air out a little bit. But other than that, you know, you would hop around. You would hop around because you knew that that was the atmosphere. The atmosphere was, everybody was trying to do that. You know, you know that there's so much to do and there's so little time to do it. You know, and just you. I left Yeridea for last because, like, the chinuch in yeshiva, Yeridea was basically like, you know, when you have to leave, you know, learn Yeridea. You know, because, you know, you want to get a smicha before you leave. You know, but till then, like, what was, like, why? You wanted the chaperon. So for me, Chaperon Ryan was, so I got married, and I had this wonderful bracha, Baruch Hashem. My wife learned her halacha with her Rebbeinu, Zatzal. And, because my wife is very smart, she remembered all of it. Which is good, Baruch Hashem, because I'm a yeshiva, I try to learn Hevel's Bishul. Like, and it just doesn't make any sense. I understand all the words, but I can't picture it practically, so I forget it. You know, I learn it once or twice, it just wouldn't go in. I'm not, you know, I was very not natural when it came to learning halacha. So we got married the first Friday nights, you know, a few Friday nights, and my wife says she has halacha shaila because based on what she remembers, like, there should be an issue. What do we do? So I said, I don't know. So let's go ask an aid, you know, ask a shaila. So at that point in time already, it was well into December already, probably. So the Cleveland winters in December are not exactly the most geschmack place to walking around on a Friday night, you know. And the Kaila house where we live, we're a 15-minute walk from us to Yeshiva. And the Poisek of the Yeshiva, Rabbi Hirschfeld, lives another about 5-7 minutes after that. So it's a 20-minute walk there, 20-minute walk back. And it's about 0 degrees outside, and it's wind chill about 20 below, and it's snowing like the dickens, you know. Like, you know, like, you know, it's just like, you know. So what do I do? You know. So let's be polite. Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos. So then we had the Hebrew one in those days, and you try to figure out how you say the word that you're trying to figure out in Hebrew. You look up the maftech on the back, so you flip around with the dictionary a little bit, so you find the. So then you look it up, and then you. Find the page, you work it through, and you read it through. And my wife says, "Can I rely on it?" Says, "I don't know. I'm not a Poisek." Like, you know, I don't. He's what he says, but I don't know. I can't. You know, he's not our Poisek. So after a few weeks of that, I said, "Yeah, I got to start learning halacha." And that's how I started learning halacha. You know, but we left your day for last. You know, you want to have a ride, so first we did Masechta Shabbos. So if you learn halacha with Shabbos, you have to learn it right. You learn with the halacha. Masechta with the halacha. So it took me 5 years. Second say, 5 years. The whole Masechta and the Tur B'Shiris and Mechaber Taz Magen Avraham, and it took me 5 years. After 5 years, I made a siyum on the Masechta and a separate siyum on Mishnah Berurah Chelukim. Two separate sudas. A Fleishig, a sit down, minion, you know, full out, not a Shabbos suda, a full out special suda in honor of finishing the Masechta Shabbos. I said, okay, I'm not going to learn your day next. So I didn't need it first, and then after need it, I did Shabbos. And after Shabbos, you know, I kept pushing off. Like, who wants to close the book? But let's copyright some more. And then I had a chrusa with the Poisek. Actually, I made a chrusa with the Poisek. So I said, whatever you want, you know. So we learned Surat Oisius and we practiced how to write letters together. We learned how to traber, the take out the chaylev and the gittin. And we went and watched videos. We went to the shlachtos together. We learned Hillel's gittin together. You know, like, whatever you want to learn, you know, let's learn. Let's do it. Let's do it. That's what we did. But it was like you kept pushing off. You know, who wants to close the book? Like, there's so much more to do. And then you start working on Hillel's yomtiv. And And I can picture it vividly. I can picture every moment of it vividly. It's like I walk back to yeshiva, and it's an overwhelming sensory experience to walk back into Tells for me. 23 years, it was like, you know, it was part of the woodwork already. It was part of the furniture. Well, Emino Komach Air, it's Eli Rangel's going to leave Tells yeshiva. You know, it was like, I wasn't the only one. I have Chaim still there. Chaim's still there in yeshiva, sitting and learning. Some of the older ones have moved away to Lakewood. It's much more conducive at this point in time. It's much older. There's an older Elohim learning at Lakewood. But there's people sitting and learning, and they're learning, you know, with the chiyus, with the excitement, with the geshmak. So that was it. That was the flavor. I've been talking straight for an hour and 15 minutes. If somebody wants to ask, you know, it wasn't officially a lecture over here. Yeah.
How come it is in yeshivish yeshivas? It's like the culture of the yeshivas to be very shtoltzy. Why is it that way, or is that just a cultural thing for no reason?
You know, I can't tell you about the next generation of yeshivas because I don't know that. My yeshivas weren't shtoltzy. In the sense of they weren't standoffish at all. B'chol not. They were very down to earth and warm. Just they were European in the sense that there was a reserve to them. In B'chol, Europeans were not very expressive emotionally, but it doesn't mean that there was a very strong sense of the emotion being there. I'll give you just one motion. I know Shiva Chaim, one tuba was, you know, there was something going on, you know. We had something going on. My wife and I had something going on. It was, you know, so it was. So Shira Khan wanted an update every single day how everything's okay. One morning, for every reason, didn't give him an update. So the next morning, he walked in. She says, "I waited for you yesterday. I want to know what's happening. Everything okay?" Like he cared about you. I mean, my wife used to describe our relationship with Shira Khan was like more like a, it was like a Zaidi. Like it was very, very warm type of relationship. I think. Probably, I would just say, probably, a lot of the next generation of yeshivas saw the Rosh Hashivas and imitated, if you excuse the word. You know, they saw that, but you know, when you're European and that was your whole culture, it came across as normal. You're American and it wasn't your culture, and you did it. It came across as shtoltzy. Seems like you're being cynical a little bit.
For some reason now, a couple of yeshivas I've been to, the Beis Mishpacha are not close with the high school. Was there a problem with that in Tells or
the Dafka not? I mean, you know, every Bachur Beis Mishpacha had Dafka would learn with the guy in the high school. There was a chinuch of respect, which was mechuna, because the older you got, the more there was an expectation that you would give. I mean, the younger Bachur were expected to give kavod to the older Bachurim. But it was true, all the Bachar Matak were to Midrash Chachamim. I mean, these guys had sat and learned Bahasmada, you know, for years. And all the Bachar tells him that he was 23 years old. You know, he'd been learning for 5-6 years after high school. He had to know something. What? Not a 19-year-old Bachar. You know, like, I'm 19-year-old, you're only 18. I'm better than you. Like, you know, like, no. You know, they didn't have that. It was, I mean, there was a certain amount of naturally, there wasn't so much flow together, except for that Seder together. Shabbos was way at the same dining room, but it was different tables. But there's a lot of older guys and shaykhs, the younger guys. I mean, I needed a little more help, because I came to yeshiva, I had learned Gemara for 4 weeks, so I did need a little more support than most guys coming in. Most guys had learned Gemara for a little more than 4 weeks before they came to yeshiva. So I had an older harusa that they got me, you know, really worked very hard with me. And besides that, I felt I needed more, so I asked another older bacher to learn with me, and he learned with me. And, you know, they're very, you know, I used to hang out in their rooms. Every Shabbos used to go and hang out in their rooms, and shul with them, very open. I have chavarim to this day, which I used to hang, you know, they're older than me, but I used to drop in the room and schmooze. They would keep some type of food there, and, you know, give me something to eat and sit and schmooze with me. You know, I mean, I probably was a little more of the darling of the yeshiva in some ways. I was a little bit of a strange, you know, the whole story was a little bit strange. The guys thought it was like really interesting, you know, interesting. So they sort of made, you know, but I don't think I was unique in that sense. There was a lot of younger bachurim kashayachos, older bachurim that way. And really, one of the common things was the camp. The camp in those days, Camp Poterra, which is still there, in those days was all telzer. All the councils were, it was all telzers. Now the councils are from other places also, you know. In those days, it was like every councilor was a telzer. Everything was telzer. But you had the councilor, you had the JCs, and you know, the camp was a much more time to be, a more relaxed time. So that was also a way to get shaitas.
What's lacking now in this generation?
You know, it's a different, it's a hard question because, you know, the generation is quite, you know, broad spectrum of a generation. What's a generation? You know, you can look at the base medrash of Silver Spring and you look at the base medrash of Riverdale and I say that they're not exactly the same, you know. And some issues we overlap, but some issues we definitely don't overlap. It's hard for me to say because, you know, I was there to see something which doesn't exist anymore. The world that I saw of Rashivas from Europe, with, you know, which came from a world of Europe, where all there was, Rishgifton one time told us, he said, you know, I told him that I'm embarrassed, like, you know, he described the Bachem learning in Tells. I said, you know, we're nowhere near that Hasmada and that type of Mesiris Nefesh, etc. He says, you're right, but there's nothing else to do in there in Europe but to learn. There's no distractions because nothing else existed. They couldn't afford anything anyway. My brother-in-law used to describe it in Shtetl. The excitement in Shtetl was if a Magid would come to town and say a shmooze, that was excitement in Shtetl. Like, that was excitement, you know. The Magid says a shmooze, you know. There's nothing, right? So in America, there's so many distractions. But, you know, at least, you know, from our end, maybe she was like, our end, you know, that musig that we're scared to throw ourselves into the world of Torah sometimes. Because it is a scary world. And when you throw yourself in, beginning you flounder, and beginning you think you're going to sink. And then, you know, not everybody, and there's guys who didn't, you know, it was very hard for them, and they never really made it, you know. But most of us, most of my chaverim, you know, the weaker guys and the stronger guys, they threw themselves in, and they worked hard, and they found that they enjoyed swimming. My father, Elul Shalom, was the, you know, he taught me how to swim. He threw me into the pool. Like, you know, that was the generation, you know, like, you know, either he'll sink or he'll swim. You know, if he sinks, you go and you'll save him. You know, if he swims, he swims. You know, you know. So I think there was a little bit of that. You know, you're gonna swim, but the message very clearly was we expect you to do it. Now we didn't all believe in ourselves that we could do it. I mean, I was like, I was overwhelmed in many ways. But the message very much was, you know, you can do it. But it wasn't said. It was so obvious. It was just communicated. Like, yeah, of course you can do this. Not, you know, like, you know, yeah, poo, don't worry about it. You're a crybaby. It was like, you know, it's gonna be hard. It's okay to be hard. Life is hard. Growth is hard. Challenges is hard. You know, and that's what life is about. You know, I mean, the chinuch in Europe was for sure like that. You know, nothing came easy. You know, learning in base medrash with no heat. Didn't come easy either, you know. But that's what you did. So throw the guy into base medrash and tell him, you know, chazer again. Chazer. I remember I had a chaver yeshiva, had a very weak head, and he dreamt of the day that he'll say a chabura. So he left Tells. He went to another yeshiva, which the yeshiva doesn't exist anymore. And I meet him in the street, like, you know, a few months later. I met him in New York. I was in New York for a Ben Zonim, I think. He screams at me, he says, I said a chabura. He said a chabura. He worked for 20 hours, five nights in a row, from 12 to 4 in the morning, he worked on the chabura. Took him 20 hours to prepare that chabura, but he said a chabura. but and his rabbi set up with him those five nights in a row, from 12 to 4, working with him on the Tabor. So, like, you know, that musig, that it's just because it's more challenging for you doesn't mean you can't do it. I think a lot of our guys, we sort of, like, you know, categorize ourselves. That's a scary thing. Or we're scared of the challenge, or we're overwhelmed by challenge. You know, one of my favorite says, you know, nowadays we're all generation of you know, cream puffs. You know, a lot of air. Yeah, what but it means, you know, we find it overwhelming we find it scary to believe that we can do it and to jump into it.
What's the difference between our Rabbeim in Europe and what's the biggest difference between our Rabbeim in Europe and our Rabbeim in America? The biggest difference in yeshivas and Rabbeim.
Biggest difference. I mean, well, you know, the level of what it meant to be a Talmud Chacham in Europe and what it meant to be a Talmud Chacham in America, it was two different things. Like, you know, in America, but Yid knows all six volumes of Mishnah Berurah well, and he can pask, and, you know, he's considered, you know, Yid Taka knows something, knows how to pask and something, you know. You know, in Europe, that wasn't. You know, we you know, obviously there were certain Talmid Chacham which we know their names, etc. There's just as many who are just as big, which we never know their names. Sitting in these little, you know, little shtetl the size of this campus, you know, there was that they sat and learned the whole time. And that's it. They knew everything. They knew all over. Your gifted used to say over there's a little town near Tel's called Vainut. The Rav of the Vainut was called the Vainut Rav. Reza Altshuler. Reza Altshuler was a Yid Hundu Ganshas, Baal Peh. I'm not talking about Baal Peh. He says he once went over to by Rabbi Avida Miller Zatzal, Schasta, who was learning a Slobodka then, and Gifter was learning a Tel's, but they'd both been in Rishon Lechonon together, and YU together. It wasn't YU in those days, it was Rishon Lechonon. YU didn't exist. I mean, there was officially no such title in those days. It was Rishon Lechonon. So he went to the chas. The chas is in Vainut. So he went over to Vainut to ask him a kashon. Zvachim samach vav. So the Rosh says you have to hear the Gemara first. So we did this. I went to get him a Gemara because the chas was they would do it in the front of the shul. So it's neither neither command this nit. That's what I mean. He would say it verbatim. He said it verbatim. Gemara Rashi Toys is word for word. So some of vav and alf. I'm a bay on the spot. The whole thing. Word for word. Okay. He said, oh, good. I said, what do you want to ask? Because it says, Vainut was the size of this table. He says, point this, Vainut was the size of this table. That's, you know, that was this little dinky shtetl in the middle of the, you know, but they had a row. It was the Yidu Tamachochum. It says, the Smicha Bechinen tells, the Rav didn't give the Smicha Bechinen. The Vainut Rav gave the Bechinen. So you would go to, you travel from Tel Zimun, it was like, you know, half an hour, half a day's travel, whatever it was. You know, a few, 20 miles away, whatever it was. And you sit and talk, and you would stay there. The Vainut had nothing to do the whole day. Because there was nothing going on in this, you know, the little shtetl, you know. You know, once a day, a lady would come in with a child and a chicken, you know. Curse of ices. So you would talk and learning with the Vainut Rav. He would talk to you and learning wherever you wanted, and anywhere in Shas, and all 4 o'clock in Moshel Chonaro, for 3 days straight, an average of 10 to 12 hours a day. And after 3 days, he would, if he thought you'd know well, he would give you a smicha. That was the smicha bechina in Europe. Okay, and there was hundreds of people who had smicha. What?
Now the written test is so much different.
Yeah, but the written test is on, you know, if you picture it, the written test nowadays, the person takes it, he took a Yerdei bechina. So he took from Ayin Hei to Kuf Yud. Right? Mm-hmm. That's 35 simonim. And those 35 some money, he sits and it takes him 2 years to learn. Right? And, you know, and that's it. And then he takes his bechina. Wow, he's now a smicha. This is all of Shas and all 4 chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. Okay? That's the difference. A little bit different. Saying, so what's the difference in Europe and America? The Musagim were different. I mean, you know, it's like, if that's what the Rav knew, so what, you're going to say you're Talmud Chacham when you know 35 Simonim? Okay, they're hard Simonim, you know, but that's not, you know, you can't fool yourself, you know, you want to be considered somebody. So now you picture, now what is it? Yitzchak Chacham was considered the Pesach Gador. Imagine what he looked like. Right? You know, like that was the Rav of, you know, Shtetl X. So what it mean to be the Rav of Kovna, you know? You know? But you know, it wasn't. One of my chaverim learned in Philly, so there was two of the Leibtaub, the European, he's talking to the still alive. Leib and her mental kaplan, Zichron Baruch Lev B'chem Chaim, were chavrusas together. They used to learn together in the room every day, afternoon. He says, the guys would sometimes listen outside the door to hear the conversations. So one of them would start with like a line and says, you know, says Chabakasha, so this is like Avdi Meluyim. He says, name is Avdi Meluyim, but with the Ksois. No. You know, that's how the conversation went. They didn't finish the sentence. Like, he says, he'd say, Avdi Meluyim. He really knew which other Meluyim he was referring to. He said, that's not Avdi Meluyim. And I'll prove it to you, because the Avdi Meluyim and the Ksois said like this. He didn't say which Ksois. Because the Ksois said not like that. He says, that's not Pshat the Ksois. But the Shemaitis said like this. You know, like, but what about the Nesivis? Which Nesivis? The Nesivis. You know which Nesivis you're referring to. Right? Imagine who was a shop like that. That was two Bachim who learned in the mirror. I mean, you know, they were old already. So like, that's what it meant to learn in the mirror in Europe. You know. But you know, they lived in a different world. Rashiva always says over a story. Actually, it's a beautiful story. There was a Bachim in Tells, his name was Nissim Graz. So Nissim Graz was gifted, came from America, like he didn't really know so much about European learning. He walked to Beis Medrash and he said, you know, he was overwhelmed by the experience. He walked to Beis Medrash, middle of second Seder, there was 450 Bachur in Yeshiva, and there was the curl was a smaller rabbi. He says, he looked around, not one Bachur was battling the whole Beis Medrash. Shira Chaim said, but he says, stomach there was, but you know, gifted didn't know this because he was an American. But he says he noticed a bark on the back of the guy who was pushing, his face was shining from simcha. So he says to himself, that bark has to be a rich bark. Like, he can't be so happy unless he's rich. So right then, there was another American who was learning in Tells. His name was Aaron Paperman, Zichron Baruch. And Aaron was also from Baltimore, actually. And the Rav had asked Aaron, you know, the Bacher, Aaron Paperman, who's a Bacher that, you know, when your gifter walks in, he should, you know, take help him out. So he just then noticed him. He walked over to him. Shalom Aleichem, Shalom, good. He says, so that Bacher over there, he must be a rich Bacher. Right? So Aaron Paperman started laughing. So she started laughing. Gifter said over the mice. He says, your mama hit the nail on the head. He's the poorest Bacher in the whole yeshiva. He's the poorest Bacher in the whole yeshiva. Because this is why he's so happy. So Ryan Paper gave him this look, like, you know, one day you'll understand. You know, he was learning Torah. Nissen Graz, his father was also actually the Lunden Tells, you know, generation before that. His father was a Rav in some little dinky shtetl. They couldn't afford to pay him enough to live on. He had nine kids. There was no food, nothing. He had one set of clothing. Period. Shabbos, you know, Shabbos weekday, one set of clothing. Rav Shach, that's all I said to myself. He had one set of clothing. He says, you know, what did he do? He washed his shirt. So he would take off his shirt, close his jacket like this, go wash his shirt, let it dry out, and then put his shirt back on. He said, basically, so, you know, he let his shirt dry out, and he would sit like this, you know, with his jacket closed. That's all he had. That's what it meant to be a bacher in Europe. You know. That was the poverty. So that was a story, and one time I asked, and he wouldn't say the name of the bacher. One time, someone came up and asked him, what was the name of the bacher? He said, Nissim Graz. Okay. Stuck in the cup, Nissim Graz. 10 years ago, Yid comes to collecting here. Pesachoshim, Yid comes collecting, comes to my house. Starts talking, he says, what's his name? His name is Graz. Last name is Graz. And he says, what was your father's name? He says, Zvulun Graz. He says, Zvulun Graz. He says, you had an uncle named Nissen Graz? He said, yeah, Uncle Nissen Graz. He says, I want to tell you my son had an uncle. So he never heard the story. So I told the Siddur, my son his uncle. His father, he was killed. Nissen Graz was killed by the Nazis in Yerushalayim. So his father, Zvulun Graz, got out. And I was able to tell him my son. Like, he told me that his father wasn't alive anymore, but one of his aunts was still alive. He's going to call his aunt and tell her the mice about her brother who was killed, you know, such a mice. So it was like, I don't know why it's like, now it just takes up the mice, you know, I know the name sticks because I have to have mice. I don't know why it stuck in my head. Nissen Graz. You know. It was the simple of learning. America was hard to, you know, it was hard to recreate. Hard to recreate it. The same. There's a lot of distractions in America. By us in yeshiva, there was a water fountain in Beis Medrash in the building. There was no cups, so you'd go to water and take a drink, but you wouldn't. You know, there's no way to bring it to Beis Medrash. Nobody brought anything at the Beis Medrash. There's no food in Beis Medrash. The whole time in Beis Medrash was mishmor at 12 at 1 o'clock. They used to give out cake. One of the rabbis was having cake. And Friday afternoons, in the summer. It's, you know, Saturday was over 1:30. They didn't make care of the Shabbos in Cleveland. Cleveland, you know, Shkia is late, so Mincha Erev Shabbos was 8:30. Shkia was 9:04. What?
We all played for 6 hours.
What?
We played for like 6 hours.
So there was some guys who played for a few hours, and there's guys who learned. But the guys who learned, so you know, you eat lunch at 1:30, and you go straight till 8:30. And then you ate the suit at 10 o'clock at night. You know, you sit down to the suit about 9:30, you finish the suit. You start about a quarter, then you'd eat the suit. So guys are starving. So my wife, I think the second year we were there, she started sending cake for the bachurim. So 6 o'clock, my wife used to bring up cake for the bachurim. We were learning about Spanish. She did it for all the years we were there. Just to give that's the only time. But during the week, there was no food in Spanish. There wasn't a candy machine. There wasn't a soda machine. There wasn't anything. There was water. So one time, the bottom, you know, Tana, they should bring in a soda machine. And we get to find out about it. And it was there for less than 24 hours. it says, you don't learn Torah, you know, drinking a can of, he's, you know, Midwestern, you know, soda pop, you call it. And like this, sitting back with your cup of soda pop. That was he made lasanas out of it like this, you know. That's not how you're not coming to see learning about drinking soda pop while you're living. I never had a musik of drinking a Beis Medrash till I came here. When I came in Silver Springs, so we learned over there in that the little Beis Medrash was the Beis Medrash. There was no central in those days air conditioning. There was two window units which did garnished. And it was humid and it was hot. And I came from Tel Aviv, you never took off your jacket, basically. And I was sitting there with my jacket on, and the Pasha almost fainted. I was sweating like this, you know. Like, you know, I said, I need to drink something, you know. So that's when I started drinking Mizmetters. But you know, tell them, I was almost drinking. You didn't eat or drink Mizmetters. You learned Mizmetters. You should lose Mizmetters also, but you know, but you didn't. You didn't eat the base matter, you know, or drink a base matter. Like now, it's like, you know, even shmooze base matter, like, but the guys were shmooze. I mean, the guys, you know, there wasn't bittul Torah going on, you know, there was. But you're embarrassed. You're embarrassed, which meant that, you know, if you did, he did it quietly. He wouldn't, you know, a guy laughing out loud in the middle of base matter, you know, on a funny joke. Like, you know, those things laughing out loud in the middle of base matter, a funny joke, you know. Even if it was funny, but you make it, you know, you quiet, ha ha ha, and you go right there. Like, you wouldn't publicize it against the Welt. I am battling Rabbi Zai, you know, in a big sign, you know. You wouldn't do that, you know. You wanted to, you would, it didn't make sense. Mashgiach would walk around once in a while, you know, mention the kavisim. You know, like, he wouldn't make a big shmuz out of it, just like, you know, give you a look. You know, that was enough for most guys to say, "Mistam, I should, you know, I should talk, stop and get back into the Gemara." I built a mizvah also, you know, so don't worry. Plenty of good shmuz and I had a mizvah. Yeah, it always started with something, you know, either with a good ma'isa or with a good vort and something else, etc. But once it wasn't learning Gemara, it was guaranteed to go the wrong direction. Okay, I think it's time for Marv. The Marv's one's here, right?
Who's?
What?
I don't see him coming.